Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Regular programming has been thrown somewhat, and that's just in life, full stop. But today I'm sitting down, Adam Peacock, alongside Mark Bosnich, and we're going to try and update people and just give people a bit of an insight and a few questions for Bozza at the end that we've thrown out there on Twitter. Bozza, first of all, how are you?
Very, very good. And hello to you, Adam, and hello to everybody who's listening to this podcast out there. I'm okay, touch wood, so far. Family is as well. And I hope everybody listening out there is as good as can be as well. We're obviously facing an unprecedented situation. And the best advice, very, very simple, that I can give everybody, and we know that, is to stay at home. If you need to go out essentially for anything, to a pharmacy to get some food, that's completely understandable. But if not, just to stay at home and follow the government advice and on anything else. And just to say that we will get through this. It's going to be a tough time, but we will all get through this, and we'll come out at the end of the tunnel, much stronger.
Yes, life as we know it's been tipped on its head, basically, and it's been stripped back and stripped back, and then you just got to look at how, as an individual, you can help the collective, and that's staying at home at the moment. How are you going? I've got four kids, so we're homeschooling since last Wednesday week. It's going well. Everyone's and online learning. The schools have done so well in transitioning to that.
The schools have done a fantastic job. I've got two young children. One age of 8, Allegra, the other one age of 3, Cassius. They're having a great time. I mean, there's obviously fights, as we all know, every now and then. One minute they're getting on great, next minute is, as you know, is
WWE.
Basically, but really, really good. The younger one, Cassius, he's a little bit more outgoing. He likes to come out with me, you know, when I have to go out for a walk and all that, whereas Allegra has really adapted well. Allegra actually chucks a tantrum when we say, let's go out for a walk.
Homebody, is she?
Oh, yeah, very much so. She's actually really, really enjoying it. But just a special word for the schools, and I know it's been a very conflicting time for them and a very difficult time for them. My Allegra goes to Fort Street here. It's right up near the Harbour Bridge for people who know Sydney. And our principal at our school, Michelle, she's been absolutely fantastic, and so have all the teachers. They've obviously, you know, adapted to every situation that's been asked of them, and they're doing homeschooling as we talk about it, you know, right now as we speak. So, and as I say to everyone else, right at this moment in time, the most important thing is, like I said, just to stay home. If there's, you know, somebody used to tell me a long time ago, Adam, it was a great saying, if you can get this, if there's doubt, there's no doubt. i.e., if you've got a doubt about something being an essential service, that means there's no doubt it's not, okay? Everyone needs food. There's some people that need medical supplies in terms of from pharmacies, just to make sure, you know, you can go out for them. We all know about that. And to make sure as well that, you know, if you're thinking to yourself, you know, I'm going to be short of this in a couple of weeks, and that you've got people like the Red Cross, you've got people, there's government services, all that right now that you can make a call to.
Yeah, exactly. We're in a heavily sanitized room, basically.
There's
much sanity going on with the sanitizer available right now. I've got it in my little...
And would you say that we're 1.5 metres apart? I think so.
I think we're about 3 metres apart, which is double what we want. And just for those that read David Squires's weekly cartoon,
you just show me that
Robbie and Bozza aren't living together. No. Although you previously have for a little time.
Well, I did. He had a rough time. It was about 6 or 7 years ago. I don't want to go into the situation, but personally, and I just said to him, do you need any help? He said, I'd like somebody to stay with me for a week, which I did. So that was very, very interesting.
Enlightening.
Well, enlightening in one way, in the other way, so that's why, you know how I always say to you, I like to be ahead of the curve. So that was about, I'd say, 6 or 7 years ago, and without sort of, you know, being too light about this present situation, probably without knowing it, I actually got used to self-isolating from that period. So since then...
Was another period that you self-isolated, but we weren't
going to... Yes, so another time to get ahead of the curve, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let's get into some football topics, because a lot of people out there, I put it out on Twitter yesterday, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this who aren't on Twitter as well, wondering what on earth is going on. So we'll try and give a picture as best we can, keeping in mind that we are... almost as much in the dark as you are about the future. Even the people who are in charge of the country are in the dark about the future. Exactly what is going on, because day to day it changes so much, and it is such a, as we've been hearing, a fluid situation with this whole
pandemic.
Exactly. So we'll try and strip it back and give a bit of an idea about exactly what is going on. And one of the questions that has come through is, and we'll start at the top, James Johnson, welcome to Football Administration. And it wouldn't have been easy if he was still at FIFA or at City Football Group, but now he's in charge of a code, a sport that means so much to so many right here, Bozza. And Nick Ruppolo, who's a journalist himself, actually, he's isolating at home. And I hope you're doing okay, Nick. He's asked this question. He's approaching his first 100 days. How would you sum up James Johnson's first 100 days in charge of the FFA?
Well, for me, like I said, in my opinion, I think he's done a superb job in unbelievable circumstances. And, you know, to talk about a baptism of fire with what's going on. And so far as I'm concerned, he hasn't put a foot wrong. And he's been very, very clear. And, you know, him and Greg O'Rourke and all the club owners, to be fair, the players as well as the coaches, what they did to try to keep this competition going was absolutely amazing. We're only truly hear about it when this is all over. And the fact that we were the last sport left standing, you know, when I was growing up, Adam, you know, way back when in the 80s, you know, there's a lot of people used to turn around and say, oh, you know, football's for sissies and all that. Well, the sissies were the last ones that were standing, you know, so I was so proud of them. And the way
people weren't happy about that, they reckon that
and I can understand. I had a, you know, and I won't mention their names because I speak to them all the time, and obviously they're close friends of mine. They had the same question for me. And as I explained to them, you know, quite understandably, I can understand where they're coming from. But the bottom line was, while the advice from the chief medical officer was that we could play, there was no reason not to play. And the state that we've seen, even with other sports, big sports, and we're talking about AFL, which is the fourth most attended sport in the world, that, you know, they're talking about them and obviously NRL with a financial crisis, where our sport, as we know, is in a precarious financial situation. There's no doubt about that. And the bottom line was that we really, while the chief medical officer said we could play, we had no choice. And like I said, I thought the effort that everyone put in was absolutely amazing. And that was obviously led off by, you know, Greg O'Rourke and James Johnson, along with the club owners. And, you know, people can say what they want in terms of, you know, this, that and the other. But the bottom line is, the most important thing is, as it was always stated by James, is people's health.
Yeah.
All right. The second thing that will come, and that will be the second wave, Adam, you know, once we beat this thing, which we will as a country and a people, will be the economic hardship. And like I said to you, at that time when the chief medical officer said it was safe to play, we went ahead and did it. Bottom line is, then when it come to, I mean, Anastasia Palaszczuk put the travel ban on, then South Australia followed suit, and I thought it might have been the other way around, and Western Australia.
Yeah.
The obstacles just become too many. So the fact that they've postponed it, means that, you know, we'll have another look at things come mid-April, and hopefully, touch wood, that we'll be able to continue the season.
How it stands right now is the fact that I've found out through various parties that three quarters of this season's TV deal has been paid. They get paid in quarters. So if you're thinking that nothing has come through from the broadcaster, and this is difficult, obviously, you might be listening to this going, well, hang on, you work for Fox, you must know everything that goes on. If you've heard of the term,
we don't.
Stay in your lane.
Yes.
That's exactly
how mine is, you know, it's above my pay grade.
Yeah, above you, but stay in your lane. We don't know the wording of a contract. We don't know what triggers what. So a lot of people, and fair enough to Daniel Scuteri has asked this, and many, many more on Twitter, what is the situation with the TV deal and the A-League? Everything is up in the air at the moment. There will be discussions that will take place in the coming weeks with every code that has a TV deal with whatever broadcaster, wherever it is in the world. The Premier League, La Liga, the Sumo Wrestling Association of Japan, everything will come into being in terms of lawyers sitting down with lawyers and administrators sitting down with administrators to find out
when they can sit down.
When they can sit down to work out a path forward. Economically, the world has changed so much. So everything is up for discussion. That's all I can say. Now, what I can say is, from a Fox employee, we will continue to provide a service as best we can until which time we get told by those above us or those to twist it, change it, or double down on it and make it even better. So we'll wait and see with that. But I do know that soon, I don't know when, the broadcasters will meet with the hierarchy of the FFA and the A-League clubs to sit down and work out a way forward for this. Whether it changes everything going forward in terms of what you see right now, I dare say there will be some kind of change. I don't know what, but it can't continue.
Well, we don't. I know. I mean, again, you're talking hypothetically. I mean, you may be better informed than me, but you're talking hypothetically. I just want to explain to everybody, and this goes not only for Fox Sports, but for people, landlords, renters. That's another thing that's obviously a huge talking point right this moment in time. Everyone's got pressures, and everybody will have pressures. It's going to be very, very difficult time for a lot of people. And I think the most important thing for everybody is, to basically, if you can, to give each other a break. And that's the only thing I can say. And when I say that, I mean, at this moment in time, there's a war going on, and the war is against the COVID-19. We need to all buckle down and to think about that. And, the government at the moment, regardless of what people think about it, they've been voted in by us, the people.
Yeah.
They need to be listened to. Simple as that. Okay. We can all, take pot shots from the sideline and this, that, and the other. And you know what? That's your democratic right. Okay. And completely understandable. But just think twice before, and just think to yourself, there will come a time for that when this is all over, when people can say this and say that or whatever. Right this moment in time, they're the people that we as a country voted in that we need to listen to. And in terms of the other thing, like I said to you, there's going to be pressures coming from everywhere. So instead of people speculating, if somebody knows something, they want to print it, okay, fine. And this is the nature of the business. Obviously, I've been in this business now for 10 years, Adam. You've been in it all your life. So you know it better. So people get something, they want to put it on Twitter, or they want to break the exclusive, understandable. But just think twice, because a lot of people have got a lot more influence than they realize.
Yeah.
And, things can start just with a little spark, and it can turn into a wildfire. So just think twice.
Social media, yeah. Just on regards to the FFA, I have heard from multiple sources as well that they have actually approached tentatively, and they know they're at the back of the queue because there's much bigger things at play with the government about a funding situation in terms of grassroots clubs. So it affects football at every level because it is tiered in terms of the payment structure going up and down. There was a bit of a hoo-ha-ha yesterday as we sit here on a Friday afternoon and record this podcast about grassroots fees and association fees going to Football New South Wales and being passed up the chain, about player registration. So Billy and Joanne have paid their fees for their son or daughter to play football. What happens with that money? Is it being withheld? That they're still trying to work out exactly what happens. The main aim, and I've spoken to a number of administrators across grassroots and the second tier as well, Football New South Wales, they just want what is best for the game. Now, it might feel at the moment that, oh, someone's going to rip me off. And that's fair enough, because it is unprecedented in terms of financial state of play at the moment in Australia. But at the moment, they are just trying to work out a structure which satisfies as many people as possible. And the aim is not to rip anyone off, and for football to survive this and get through it all. Mm. That's the key to it all. Now, it might not feel like that from day to day, but big picture, take a step back. And one thing that I've kind of grasped, Bozo, I don't know if you feel the same way, is that this is actually all that crap that has been going on over the last 2 years with football and fighting over it. And it's been around since you came through the system as well. And it will continue to be. Mm. But more than anything, this has actually put everyone on the same page to realise there is a higher thing here.
You'd like to think so. And like I said, there's people working their socks off, right at this moment in time to make sure, like you said, that there's a proper outcome. But I would just go one step further. Their focus is on the game, and when we exactly right, but the majority of people anyway need to focus completely on health and life to get through this. And I'm sure that they will be doing that. So people got to think to themselves, like I said to you about my little slide, just give people a break. If, for example, there are parents, wherever they may be in Australia, who have given fees over to a federation to play football this season, it's very unlikely there will be football this season. There may be, but it's very unlikely there will. They may need that money, Adam. Yeah, they may need that money for another reason. One of their, one of the family may have lost his or her job and so forth. Give it back. Because the way we behave during this crisis will be etched not only in history, but will define how you live the rest of your life. So resist any type of temptation. We've seen some selfish behaviour. It's still been in a minority, but we have seen some selfish behaviour. Let's not concentrate on that.
Like toilet paper?
No, yeah, but let's not even talk about it. It's nothing, you know, what we do during this crisis as individuals and as a country will define you for the rest of your life. So just keep that in the back of your mind, and people will remember which way that you swing. And that goes for everyone. We all understand everyone's pressures. The best policy always, when in doubt, tell the truth. Okay, if you are struggling, no matter who it is, okay, just come and say, I'm struggling, I need some help. That's it.
Reset the league. Ryan Stable has asked a question. Is this an opportunity to reset the league in some way, shape or form?
Yeah, of course it is. It's an opportunity to reset the whole sport. There's no doubt about that. But like I said, that does come after. We've got to make sure we get through this first. But in terms of resetting the league, I'd like to for Ryan to maybe elaborate some when we do this next time on what exactly he means. Now, we know there's another team due to come in next season, in MacArthur Rams. MacArthur Bulls, sorry. So as it stands, there's going to be a 12-team competition. We know that we're at advanced talks to have a national second division, which will eventually come in. But right at this moment in time, like I said to you, in terms of resetting the league, you know, I've said all along, I mean, how long have you sat next to me, Adam, for 10 years? More, 12 years, since 2008, yeah?
Feels like yesterday, though, boss.
Yeah, I know.
It's
just
been so good.
Since I've been back in the country.
Since you've been back in the country.
So that was for John Aloisi, if he's listening to it. And I've always advocated, really, from pretty much the first time I sat next to you, to have promotion relegation, if they can afford it, if they can do it, to have a tiered system. And that's all well and good. And people turn around and say, you know, I saw, you know, our mate on Twitter, Dean Rosario, who's always very vocal about, you know, people talk about, you know, where they're going to get the money from. Well, that is a big subject. And people are very, very frightened because of what's happened in the past. But I can also understand his optimistic point of view to say, like, okay, well, so far as it's above board, you know, and people are saying they've got the money to do it, let's do it. And there's no problem to do that as well. But I think the most important thing throughout all of this is that, number one, everybody in the game knows exactly where they stand. Mm-hmm. And also that everyone's got an opportunity, you know, whether it be a young boy growing up in Northern Territory, you know, looking at posters on his wall of A-League stars, or somebody growing up around the corner here in Sydney, Adam, doing the same thing, that they know that they've got an opportunity to, if they join a club, to play in the very, very top league. Now, the bridge has already been built in terms of the FA Cup. We've seen how great that's been, and that's been a start. But with everything that's going on with this COVID-19, in terms of resetting the game, how's it going to look like? Well, what I don't understand about that, and that's why I'd like Ryan or some others, when they hear this on Twitter, is, you know, when we come back, you know, we've still got 3 years left of a contract as an A-League entity. So promises have been made, money's been paid for licenses and so forth. You can't just turn around and say, right, all bets are off.
Yeah.
That may come because of some other reason, but, you know, for the time being, you know, I think, like I said to you, you know, we just got to try our very best to get this season over with and then get the season started with 12 teams. And then if everything is all okay, look to expand, look to involve that national second division and just go along basically doing the same things that we've actually been doing in terms of the last couple of years, people putting in plans and things in place that to make sure that we fulfill our potential. And that's all you want to do.
What I'd like to see in terms of a reset is underneath the A-League and W-League structure is bridges being built, and now's I see it as the perfect opportunity once, as you say, and everything is hooked on the fact that once we are through this and once we are back on our feet in some way, shape or form, maybe not as strong as we once were economically or whatever, but that will take time. But once we see that we're through it, that I would like to see A-League clubs, and I've long thought this, especially in the last couple of years, with all due respect to what they're doing in the academy structure, I would like to see A-League clubs, academies, kind of go back as back in the hands of the NPL clubs. And 10 NPL clubs, for instance, have a close relationship with an A-League club. At the moment, there is a massive disconnect between an NPL club and an A-League club. It's them v. us.
I don't understand. Why is that?
It's a couple of factors. It's the fact that the A-League clubs are too busy running their own race and they've got limited resources to run what they want to run. NPL clubs feel there's no direct link through transfers, for instance. There's no transfer system.
Well, I was going to say that transfer system, another thing that I advocated for a long time, could fix all of that. I mean, you know, as I've said for 10 years, did you realise yeah. how much money the game, football the economy, is missing out on by not having this installed. It beggars belief. I don't understand that for all those years that, you know, when people are in power, that they didn't just turn around and say, boom. You know, when I first come back, sorry to interrupt you, I went to a meeting. I was taken along by somebody from Sydney Olympic just to go to a meeting with the New South Wales Soccer Federation with all the clubs and that. When I heard some of the stories, you know, I remember, I think it was one about Danny Vukovic, and I think it was Bonnerig, who was still owed $3,000. This is back then. Just to, you know, and $3,000 was the cap back then. I'm thinking, what is going on? That was by Central Coast. What is going on? Number one, $3,000. You know, a club that had trained him since a youngster. And number two, why are they waiting for it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that just beggared belief. And like I said to you, every year that goes by, it's another form of income that clubs are missing out on.
Exactly. So it's an us v them mentality as well. And a lot of that does hark back to how the NSL was ended. And there's still people with bitter memories over that. And that is completely understandable how it was done. It was just a clean cut, bang, this is the A-League. The rest, go work it out yourselves. There has been disconnects between state federations and also FFA, so the tiered level of governance as well. All of this plays a part. Now, I would like to see personally the A-League clubs take the initiative here and the W-League clubs take the initiative and say, right, okay, we're going to not kind of just come in, swoop in and go, thanks, we'll have your best 13-year-old, see you later, thanks very much, no compensation, off we go. I'd like to see the academy structure change so much that those kids stay, for instance, in their NPL clubs, and then the A-League clubs come in once a week and go, come train with us. You can come in and elite, we'll have the best of the best training with each other. They play their games on the weekend, and then at the end of the season, for instance, they play an A-League Cup between all the youth academies, Sydney, but with the best players from the... So the best of the best are still getting that exposure together. That, to me, okay, football-wise, does it really tick the box in terms of youth development and getting the best out of the young players? Well, that's debatable, but certainly it builds a bridge between 10 NPL clubs and an A-League club as one, rather than us v them. That is one of the great frustrations.
You know,
I have
you're heavily involved through your son, who's now 13, is that correct?
15. Nearly 15, sorry, almost. He got a girlfriend last week.
Well, actually, there you go, yeah. He was 13 that time.
He wanted to call you for some advice.
I was going to say that he was 13 that time he'd done that shooting practice against me, which I don't really want to remember, actually. I don't think I actually saved one. So you're heavily involved, and I really like your passion about this. This is why I think it's so important when we do return on Match Day Saturday that we have what you just spoke about with the fans. The interaction. This is why, you know, with the Twitter, I remember I started that a couple of weeks ago, and you're more qualified than most to speak about this. But me being me, as you know me, I'm going to simplify it right down just for those 2 points. Number one, the transfer thing, I'm telling you now, will make the biggest difference.
Sure.
Because the bottom line is then, it's kind of like, look, even if I don't like you, Adam, I want you to buy my produce. Guess what my produce is? Players. So I'm going to do the best possible job I possibly can for myself, for that person, and for my club to produce the best players, and hopefully that you'll take them. Okay, so there's a number one, a simple thing, and that should have been done years ago. Okay, whatever should have been done, let's forget about for now on. It's like, you know, carrying a bottle of milk, you know, a glass bottle of milk, it's spilled, it's done, we're cleaning it up, let's go forward, right?
It happened to you last night, didn't it, with the milkshake upstairs?
Well, it can, yeah, pretty much so, okay? And the second thing, you know, you talked about, I just picked up on something that you talked about, you know, you just spoke, you said about, you know, developing the players to the best. It's quite simple. You identify who the best players are. The best players play with and against the best players. Simple as that. If people want to get into that, they improve. Okay? If there's any type of politics or this, that, and the other, okay, that needs to be sorted out. It's very difficult to police that. You know, people got to understand that. But the bottom line is the best will eventually get through one way or the other. Even the ones that run into problems, you know, throughout their younger career, eventually they'll come across somebody who's, majority of people are fair minded, and say, look, you know, he or she should be playing with and against the best. If I am a champion table tennis player, okay?
Here we go. You love this.
Well, it's quite simple, right?
Yeah.
And I play you. This is one of your very first times. You got a bit of talent, but it's one of your first times you played table tennis. And I beat you 21-0, okay? If you keep playing me for 2 years, 3 years, you're the only one that's going to improve.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, a lot of people say, well, Boz, well, what about if, you know, you put the best players, you know, and you know, somebody might not be able to do it in 10 years. You'll be able to see that. If in 2 years' time, Adam, you improve to the point that it's 21-1, it needs somebody to turn around and say, okay, look, you've improved, but
Maybe it's not your sport.
The guy who's winning 21-0 is actually suffering now.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Okay, so it's just basic. That, for me, those are two simple things that can be installed. Then you can break it down. You know, you're a break it down man, detail man, and there's a lot of people that are like that. But it is very, very simple. Yeah. Really is.
But my big picture thing is the us v them thing, because at the moment it's not happening, and there's the disconnect. Yeah. There is the absolute disconnect.
Well, you'd be very, very surprised. Well, you won't be, because you're not only a reasonable man, but you always look for compromises, which is a real skill, and it's a real compliment that I'm saying to you. You'd be amazed. Well, sorry, people would be amazed what can be achieved by sitting down face to face.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, and to discussing things. But 100%. Also, people have got to understand, just like in this situation now, for whatever reason, forget about the reason, there is hierarchy, okay? Mm. All right, and at the top of the pool are the elite clubs, and they're there for a reason, all right? Hopefully one day those other clubs will have the opportunity to get to that top of that pool, but they are there. Now, whether they're right or wrong is a different story.
That's where the disconnect is, though.
All right, but
Of how they got there.
Yeah, okay, yeah, but how they got there or what, they're there. Mm. But when there's the opportunity... Yeah, and I wasn't here when it all fell apart. But, you know, that was in 2004. I was in England, okay? But when the others get the opportunity, they'll have the don't worry about it. They'll have the opportunity sooner rather than later to make sure that they become one of those clubs. But that's the way it is right now. So you've got to think about the bigger picture, not your own little patch or this, that, and the other. That's how it is right now, okay?
Now's a chance, though. And as bad as that sounds right now, because we feel like we're still in the embryonic stages of this whole situation as a nation, as a world, that we're going through. But there's just a little chance for football, perhaps. And back to that question initially about the reset, that's my idea here.
Yeah, big chance, Adam. And there's no doubt about that. Look, listen, and we talk about this with forked tongues, if you like, you know, because like I said, everything is up in the air. So we've always got that on the other side. But it is an opportunity for when we come back. And let's not forget, there's a lot of, you know... associations, clubs, A-League clubs, and who have been in survival mode for a long time. Even way back in the NSL days, there were clubs like that and that. And so we're actually a better place from that perspective. The most important thing is the unity. Now, you know, recently, the game could not be more unified at the very top. Okay, so you're talking about not at the very top, you're talking about a little bit lower in terms of juniors. That's obviously got to come. But at the very top and what's going on in terms of the clubs... in terms of the FFA, you know, the majority of states, there's not been more unity in the players that there is right this moment in time. And if you've got unity, you can achieve anything.
A lot of, and fair enough too. It's a negative time. Everyone's thinking of the worst, and that's fair enough. Hmm. But I'd personally speaking, looking at how the sports are structured, oddly enough, all this consternation about the top-down funding and the lack thereof of football, the money from the top filtering all down, because it just isn't enough, as opposed to registration fees paying, that's actually a strength in a time like this, as opposed to what's going on in other codes. And I don't want to deride other codes, because I feel so sorry for the people that are going through what they're going
through.
We're
all in this together.
At a sporting code. But in a sense, football, not as bad as some of the other places. So fingers crossed that we all get through it, whatever your sporting poison is. And if you love all sports like me, hopefully everyone gets through it and as many people aren't as affected as possible. A football question before. We've got a lot of questions, Bozza, when I put it out to you, to the good people on Twitter, about what do you want to ask it. A lot of questions about you. So we'll do some quick fire ones at the end of this. But one from Simon Frey about Carl Robinson. How have you rated his impact on Newcastle Jets?
Outstanding. You know, he's only suffered one defeat during his time. The team, you know, and this has not been disrespectful to Ernie Merrick, because I thought Ernie Merrick had a lot of bad luck. Number one, of injuries. We know, obviously, all know what happened with Houlihan. And number two, just in the games. I remember that there's one game that doesn't get out of my mind. That was against Adelaide away, where they had, I reckon, about 15 chances.
They murdered them, yeah.
And it was just like, oh, this is just ridiculous. But in the end, they were left with no choice. But, you know, when Carl came in, obviously, it was all eyes open. This, that, and we could see straight away. And we'd done an interview with him, you know, pretty much immediately after his arrival.
He knows what he wants, doesn't he?
Yeah, he said, you know, he wanted to have a tactical identity. Well, he's shown that.
Yeah.
Not only shown that, but they're playing in an attractive way, and also they're getting results. So you've got really the three things really marrying up all together, which, you know, that which makes for something that's really to be proud and really to be happy of. You know, one of his players scored one of the best goals I've ever seen in my life, Topple Stanley. But that comes from, you know, and that comes from that environment. If you provide that environment for people in general, but, you know, if for players, you know, there's no problem in preparing for the worst, but you got to think for the best. Always, okay? Always think for the best. Yes, be realistic and this, that, and the other. But, you know, you've got to be positive. And this situation that we're in now really underlines that. And like I said, no worries. We'll prepare for the worst, but think of the best. And you know what? Like I said to you, they've been a real joy to watch. And they've added to the list of teams who I really enjoy watching now.
Yeah, they're going in the right direction. I hope Carl and Kenny Miller and I think Wes and also Joe Ledley, they're all trying to get back to the UK the day.
Understandable.
I was at that game, actually. Yeah. The last professional sporting game were. Played in the world, pretty much, on Monday night.
Apparently, isn't there somewhere in... Somebody told me there's somewhere... Is it Belarus?
Belarus.
Yeah, they're still playing. So somebody's trying to get me on social media to start supporting. Is it Slutsky? But I think they're just trying. Yeah, I think they're just trying to wind. I think it's a wind up. It's to say to everybody and to watch this to be careful. I think they're just trying to wind us up.
The Belarusian president came out and said, "We are a nation that's something that will rise out of the earth because of a lot of the agriculture out there. So our tractors, get in your tractors and protect us, and we'll get through this." Everyone's doing it different.
Yeah, everyone does it different. And you know what? Our government said that there will be some places that you do this, there'll be other places you do that. It's a fluid situation. And adaptability is the mark of a genius. It is, yeah.
One thing I can't work out, Japan have announced, actually, that they're going to come back. This is weird. Looking at the... They're looking like each morning, everyone's all of a sudden just getting on the COVID updates and saying, oh, where's risen and where's... Just to give us a bit of an idea about what's going on in the world. Japan's odd. They're way down the list in terms of confirmed cases. And they've said that they're going to come back, tier it. So J3 come back, J2, and then J1 on May 9. Mm. So the J League, which canned it pretty much straight away, said, no, we're just going to go into recess for a bit.
They're thinking about coming, no away supporters.
Supporters. Everyone sit one seat away from each other and all these measures. Looking at Japan, Tokyo is a city, and your sister used to live there. 38 million people, and they've got like a handful of cases. Mm. I can't work it out. I don't know what's going on.
Anyone who's been over Japan or anyone who's lived there would be able to work it out. You're talking about one of the most obedient societies in the whole of the world.
Yeah, true.
So if anyone was to take a lesson out of that, you know, in terms of sticking together and being, obviously they've been through a lot in the past as well. But in general, like I said, anyone who knows the Japanese people and has been there or has lived there will know that, you know, once, you know, when there's times like this and their government says something, they just listen. No questions asked, just listen. And that's a wonderful example to all of us at this moment in time, how important it is. In terms of starting the league, again, you're in the hands of the chief medical officer. Yep. And, you know, some things will loosen in some places, and that will be locally as well. Like, you know, we might have the time where, I don't know, Western Australia relaxes there or we do or someone like that. And that was stated quite clearly by the government, you know, 3 or 4 nights ago. So, but, you know, you always look to see, you know, why, you know, certain countries, and you talk about density. A lot of people were saying, you know, it affects because of the density of population. Well, Tokyo, like you said, is one of the most densely populated areas in the whole world. Hmm. And, you know, the fact that they can do this, you know, we should just turn around and say exactly the same when you're playing sport. If somebody can do it, if Adam Peacock can jump 3 metres, I can too. Well, at least I'm going to try, put it that way.
Yeah, that's all you can do. Yeah. Okay, let's get into the questions about your good self, Bozza. So yes. A stack of questions here. Daniel has asked. Hmm. I'm going to go through them one by one. Anything you want to pass on, just pass.
No, that's okay. Bozza, we'll be doing this again, so it's okay, Daniel.
From Daniel, Bozza, the player you were confident at all times you were going to make a save against.
Look, Daniel, to be fair, and I don't want this to come across as too conceited, but I was confident against every player. but just like the 3 metre thing I said with Adam, you know, I'm going to think to myself, I'm an optimist. I'm going to jump that 3 metres. I might jump 2.16, but that's what I think. And I think you have to be like that. You have to be confident that you're going to save every shot regardless of who the player is. How it turns out in the end is a different story. Then you might have to adapt or change things.
Who was the hardest following up?
Robbie Fowler. Robbie Fowler,
just did not know where the ball was going.
Well, for a while, there was, you know, and I very rarely did a lot of video analysis. I did sometimes, you know, but a lot of times it was just to see how the opposition played so I could help with my directions to my defence. But in terms of personal video analysis, I did it for, you know, very few players because I had pretty much the measure of a lot of things. Except for penalties, I always looked at penalties and so forth. But Robbie Fowler was one. Robbie Fowler had this habit of, it wasn't per se the outside of the boot as we'd associate maybe with a Brazilian player, you know, hitting them with the outside of the boot and go like that. You used to hit across the ball. So a lot of times watching it from a left footer, it was that wonderful goal that time at Anfield that a lot of people loved, you know, when he turned Steve Staunton inside out and just hit it from probably about 25 metres.
Yeah.
And he'd done a very similar thing. If you watch that very, very carefully, not a lot of backlift. And he basically hits across the ball. So as a goalkeeper facing a left footer, you really think to yourself, well, he can only go left. And remember, to make the really, truly great saves, a lot of the times, you have to be pretty certain that you know where they're going to go, okay? Because
a little bit, so you
can move it, not too much. That's where you got to find the balance as a goalkeeper, just a little bit, just to give it that half chance. So the way he approaches the ball in that situation, you think to yourself, 100%, you know, you start to go a little bit to the left. As soon as you do that, the ball starts going the other way. And basically, when it's hit with that type of speed, it's passed before you even know it.
See you later.
So that was one that I really, really, you know, really, really used to have to study. Another one was Gabriel Batistuta, but I didn't have to face him week in, week out. And when we played against him as Fiorentina, I mean, he hit an absolute rocket at Old Trafford. That was fair enough. But in the first game, he was given a gift. I don't know, I think it was Roy Keane or something. Or I don't know who it was. He basically... Yeah, I think it was Roy Keane. It was. Yeah. Who basically went to do a back pass and pass it straight back to him.
On your Keane. There was a question here from Tom Patterson as well. Any matches you reflect
Tom?
On? Tom Patterson.
Yeah.
He goes, and he mentioned the Batagol strike as well, that one, that you look back on and go, well, I wish I could have changed this or that, or in a match itself.
Oh, no, in my professional career, no. Like I said, I was very, very fortunate, and I would touch wood, but I don't want to because of the present situation. you know, I can't remember a time that I think, oh, you know, I wish I could have that back. You know, it's as if I made a sort of a high profile, you know, like I said, gaffe or anything like that. Very, very lucky, Adam. Very fortunate. If my career continued, which it didn't, that may have changed. But for that time, I was very, very fortunate. The biggest regret really was that game against Iran in 1997 at the MCG. You know, to be part of a team that was in such a formidable position with 20 minutes to go, it just shows one of the beauties of football is how quickly it can change.
Could you have done anything about those two goals?
I always think I could have done everything about every goal conceded. Mm. Yeah, every goal conceded. Coming back to what I just said to you as well about, you know, the anticipation one. Well, maybe if I anticipated where the second guy, I think it was Arzani, was it? No.
Daniel Arzani.
Yeah, no.
Azizi. Azizi.
So maybe if I anticipated he was going to go that side, you know, the first one was offside. If we had VAR, that wouldn't have been a goal. That was the only real one. Like, you know, when I said to you about being part of a team or whatever, so I was very, very fortunate in terms of other things. Don't get me wrong, I made my mistakes. Being brutally honest here, I was very fortunate to make very few. But the vast majority, I think all the mistakes I made were probably not as big a higher profile games that they were. Yeah. I mean, the big high profile games you're talking about is like, you know, your cup finals or, you know, things like that, you know, like I said to you, I'm very, very fortunate to have won four major trophies.
Nicholas Rojas asks, if you could go back, you wipe your memory of this game, you go back and relive a game and experience what it was like, either that you played in or watched as a fan.
Oh, watched it. I mean, there's so many. But one that really sticks out in my memory, I have to say, was probably the 1982 World Cup. That was, like I say, I was born in 1972, so 1982 I was 10.
Yep.
1978 was I was only six, so it was a little bit more of a blur. I remember Mum and Dad staying up late to watch it in Argentina. But 1982 was when I could first really watch and sort of get into it. And some of the games during, I mean, Italy versus Brazil.
Yep.
France versus West Germany, absolutely amazing. They were two amazing games. And even in 86 in Mexico, I mean, France versus Brazil, I mean, who will forget that was an absolute stunning game. So I would have to say, but I'll go for the first. I'd Italy when Paolo Rossi scored the hat-trick against a Brazilian team, which were absolutely fantastic to watch.
They were meant to skate through
and win. You know, France versus West Germany. I'll never forget the feeling. You know what it reminded me a lot of, Adam? Remember the Central Coast going two goals up in extra time?
Yeah.
Well, saying France go two goals up. You know, and Harold Schumacher had done that, Tony Schumacher, sorry, the goalkeeper for West Germany, done a horrendous challenge against Batistuta. Should have been sent from the pitch.
Yeah.
And France, you know, and we're all so behind France winning that, you know, they're 3-1 up, we're going justice. Mm. And then all of a sudden, I think it was Klaus Fischer who'd done the first goal. Rubeniger made 3-2, and then Fischer with the overhead volley to make it 3-3, and then they won on penalties, which was, it was devastating. But it made you fall in love with the game. It was an amazing tournament in 1982.
Yeah, interesting that World Cups make you fall in love with the game. I had a similar experience to Italia 90 when I was 11, 12.
So there you go, around the same age.
Waking up at 4 o'clock each morning and watching, and then England, and then Paul Gascoigne, and a link to England through my dad. And
those are treasured moments.
Oh, yeah.
You really have a massive
even the first game where Cameroon somehow beat Argentina.
Yeah.
If I could go back and wipe my memory, not knowing what was going to happen, and enjoy it, once again, with the emotions that I went through, would be Australia v Japan, first game of the World Cup in 2006.
Yeah, there you go.
My goodness.
Absolutely amazing.
My goodness.
Well, and we hadn't scored a goal before that, have we?
Hadn't scored a goal in a World Cup.
And it was dramatic. I mean, it was dramatic the way they qualified. It was dramatic that game. It was dramatic qualifying for the next round. And it was dramatic...
Going out.
Going out too, wasn't it? So that,
and it's
that
been dramatic ever since. Hey, how tough is it to be... Paul Tuohy asks...
Hi, Paul.
Firstly, who inspired you to be a keeper?
Oh, multitude. I would say a multitude of goalkeepers. My dad tells a story that I wasn't good enough to play outfield and probably just went all the way back, yeah, which is probably closer to the truth than what I'm about to say. But a multitude, you know, Pat Jennings, Peter Shilton, even watching some of the pictures of Lev Yashin, you know, Gordon Banks. There was a great, it was Yugoslavia back then. He was called Vladimir Bayara. And when I went back to Croatia in 1987, I'd actually done some training sessions with him. He's passed away now, bless his soul. Wow. And this was a goalkeeper that even Lev Yashin said he's the best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah.
So all these, Ron Corrie coaching me when I was growing up. Even some of the Australian goalkeepers here, you know, Tony Franken, I used to train with at Sydney Croatia back then. At Marconi before that, you know, people like Alan Marr, Bruce James, they were all... Mm. Like, you know, all played a part in being inspirations. I'm sorry if I left anyone out there, but they all did. Greg Woodhouse, there's another one. You know, I remember watching him against New York Cosmos at Sydney Sports Ground, where we had to sit on the end of the pitch because there were so many people.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely outstanding as well. Terry Greedy. I mean, the list goes on. It really does. Jeff Olver, you know, and like I said to you, then from abroad, you know, Gary Bailey, looking at from Manchester United, Bruce Grobbelaar, Ray Clements. I mean, wow. You're talking about some real time. There was a guy as well, Jean-Marie Pfaff from Belgium. Fantastic goalkeeper. Absolutely fantastic goalkeeper. You know, watching Dino Zoff when he was so old, lifting the World Cup in 1982.
Yeah.
Superb.
How tough is it to be a number two? You didn't have a huge experience.
No, I don't. I didn't, but I had enough. Yeah, it was very tough. That's why I admire not only number two goalkeepers, but number two players, but especially number two goalkeepers, because sometimes that can be a little bit sort of more cemented than a player, because, you know, a player can come on for you know, so many games and so forth.
Well, you look at Tando Valappi at the moment at Perth Glory. Yeah. He's been there a year and a half, hasn't seen a minute.
Yeah, and, you know, that's so, so tough because you've got to keep yourself, you know, switched on. I think it's only human nature that you relax a little bit in terms of, you know, that doesn't mean by being late or not training. You train hard and you make sure you're on time and you do everything professionally, but it's sort of, you can just relax a little bit mentally, a little bit more than you would be if you're number one, because number one, you know, it's coming up. Because remember, as a goalkeeper, Adam, a lot of the fatigue comes mentally, although you've got to be super fit physically, but a lot of it comes mentally, a little bit like a race car driver, obviously not as dangerous, because a lot of times your mistake leads to a goal, and that's the last thing you want it to be. So terribly, terribly difficult.
How do you sit there if you're the number two and you know you're close and there's nothing between you and the number one, it's just the managerial opinion, and number one makes a mistake and then makes another one.
Yeah.
How do you inside?
Well, the majority of
the
majority of goalkeepers inside will be go like ha. But I wasn't a majority of goalkeepers. I was a minority, and that's just the way anyone who knows me will know that in terms of the way that I think. The bottom line is exactly like the situation that we've got now with COVID-19. We're in this together. So, okay, it might be that next week I play or whatever, but the bottom line is if we lose the game because of that, it's not a pretty thing. In professional football, being in the dressing room or at a club, regardless of what type of money you're earning, it's not nice when you're losing because everyone's on edge, everyone's under pressure. So, like I said to you, so many things in life come back to football and what you learn through football. Yeah. Imagine this situation now. A lot of people are on edge, a lot of people under pressure, a lot of people are fearful. So just sort of break that all the way down to a football club stroke dressing room. Everyone's looking over their shoulder. It's not nice at all.
KB has asked, during your peak,
KB?
if what has happened, would you party on for a while or would you go and get a job?
I would stay in. I wouldn't have had to go get a job.
Thanks for coughing, by the way.
Sorry about that. I just watched it.
The time and a place, Bozzo.
No, but I coughed into my crooked arm, as we're supposed to.
Yeah.
KB, it's irresponsible to party on right now, and it would have been at that day as well. Yeah, I know sometimes perception is a little bit different to reality. The bottom line is, I think that got blown out of proportion. When I finished the time that I sort of enjoyed myself, if you want to say, even though it wasn't, because it was a completely different situation than a lot of people realize, was when I finished playing. When I played, I was as disciplined as anyone. and you have to be. And this is life and death. You know, do you want to live, or you know, or do you want to die? Simple as that. And that would have been exactly the same then. I would have stayed in and listened, buttoned down the hatches. You know, we didn't have the technology that we have now. But the bottom line is we still had television and things like that.
Just back to Tom Patterson, who asked a two-pronged one as well. This kind of leads into what you were just saying there. Have you got any resentment or a little bit of anger about how your career ended? Of course, you ended on a good note with Central Coast, but just before
that. Yeah, before that, even I would say disappointment, not in myself, but in others around me, that I didn't realise that, you know, that there were people up until then that were, you know, that you had, basically you had enemies that you didn't know about, because of, and basically through jealousy and envy. So I think if you get too angry for too long, you end up...
So they set you up.
Yeah, basically, And I think if you get too angry for too long, Adam, you actually defeat yourself. Yep. You become very, very bitter. And we come across people like that all the time. So it's not... You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying to you? And we always say, don't we? Go, well, wow. Why is that person so bitter? So I refuse to give in to that. But just disappointed, I sort of thought, like, why? You know, if people were that interested in my money at the time, I wish they'd rather asked me before put me through all that, and I would have probably given them half.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously, and sneakiness as well, and I don't like sneakiness, you know, cowards really, but the bottom line is that there is karma in life, and a lot of those people are suffering, and the ones that were behind it will suffer even further. But the thing is, I came out of it stronger, but it was very, very difficult to do so, because I didn't realize what was going on until somebody really, you know, well a multitude of people have now, but somebody at that time kind of really explained it to me.
It's weird. Over all these years, I've never seen you have any resentment towards that kind of thing. There was only one moment, and I don't think you realized, it was about 6 months after you came back, and we're sitting in at Fox Sports at the old offices at Pyrmont. We were watching a game. It was an early game, so we were on match day Saturday. It was Chelsea, Aston Villa at Villa Park, two of your old clubs. Beautiful spring sun, autumn sunshine over there, 40,000 people going nuts in Villa Park, and you sat up there and you looked yourself and you went, far out. Maybe I should be there, like actually still playing. But that's the only time I've heard you kind of go, I should have, I could have, I didn't.
Yeah, because I think that's part of, you know, you can make yourself very bitter if you start thinking like that all the time. Yeah. And I was saying that more for effect, to make you guys laugh. And you make that decision. Once it's done, it's done. Remember I told you at the start of this conversation about the spilt milk? And that's the type of attitude, that's what I'm saying to you about now in this situation. Whatever's happened in 2004, that we're talking about with football now, even with the situation that's going on, the big situation, whatever's happened has happened. We'll deal with it when we can. The most important thing is right here and right now. And that's exactly the same attitude that I have. Like I said, those things would take care of themselves. The main thing I was disappointed at in myself at the time, even though it was, you know, devastating to be put in that situation and have everything basically taken away from me, was the way I reacted at the beginning. I was like,
belligerent. Yeah.
Well, not belligerent, but it was like, you know, like I will stuff it, because that. But the thing is, and this is why I say to people, it's the wrong thing to do, because I had the money, I had the safety net. You know, I had the to be able to do that. Some people do that when they haven't, and then end up being homeless. You can't, you know, you can't understand how difficult it is to be in that situation, but you can't exacerbate it for yourself. And this is why I'm saying for everyone right here, right now, you know, the way we react now, will reverberate through eternity.
Tim Ziros did ask.
Hi Tim,
when's your book being released?
I'm not writing one, Tim. Oh. Yeah, I know. I'll write one when, you know, when things come to at the end of my career. I've still got so much to do and all that. So, and I'd much rather talk on situations like this, you know, and to the people that are on social media rather than, you know, basically, you know, sort of for money, basically telling things that...
To reflect on things, you
know, because I always, you know, I'm a sort of a little bit of an all-in person. I can adapt to each particular situation. But, you know, some of those memories, not some of them, nearly all of them, are very special to me. And I'd like to discuss them here when I want to, for nothing, so people can listen to them, or in a private room or a private time, and that's it, really.
Best player you played with or against? That's from W.U. Welsh.
Yeah, we'll say against. I mean, there were so many as well. The list will go on. Let's start with Diego Maradona. You know, I was very fortunate to play against him in the first playoff game in 1993.
Here in Sydney.
I mentioned Gabriel Batistuta, Raul, You know, these are all players that you play.
Eric Cantona
play against Robbie Fowler and Eric Cantona, Steve McManaman. I mean, like all of these are fantastic players. I mean, the list could go on. I really should have brought a list with me, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right.
Romario, Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo. I mean, like amazing players. You know, I could. You know, there's one of me, Boban.
You got a shirt. That's another question, actually.
Yeah, that's another question that's coming. There's
Cristiano.
There's a list. Yeah, there's a list that comes on. From who?
Boban's jersey.
All right. So yeah, so we played them in 1993, I think, at Sydney Football Stadium.
The
two games. One was in Sydney. One was in Melbourne.
The one in Melbourne where they called the game off early because they had to get to the airport.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
35 minutes each way.
So I played in the first game, then I had to go on holiday because it's been a long season. Yeah. And the late Eddie Thompson said, you can do that. And I had a really good game that night. I was very lucky. I only got done by an own goal as well. So I said to Rossi, their goalkeeper, can we change jerseys in the dressing room? He said, yeah, no problem. I came over to the dressing room to swap jerseys with him. He said, no disrespect, but can I have an Aston Villa one? So I went back. I had an Aston Villa one because I thought that might happen. So I went back and got the Aston Villa one. And he was going to give me another one, which wasn't as good as the one he played in. So I just said to him, no, I said, can I have that one? Right? And he said, no, this is the one you're going to. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
This haggling goes over shirts.
Yeah, no, this was, no, it doesn't do normally. But yeah. It was because obviously the one we're playing in, the Australian one, was a crap one. Yeah. So I just turned around and said, look, and I won't say who the player was because I'll keep his name, you know, very, very quiet. But that was a great team that we played against as well. Yeah, I mean, Jesus, yeah. I mean.
Early 90s.
So I just turned around and said, look, I think his first name was Sebastian. I think Sebastian Rossi, the goalkeeper, big tall one. I just said, look, listen, it's okay. I said, no worries, don't worry about it. So as I'm about to turn to walk out, one of the players has obviously had a go at him. They nearly had a fight. Seriously. Yeah. This is like, you know, Capello was there. It was nearly honestly, I just walked out. I just went, this is ridiculous. So anyway, I went and had a shower and this, that and the other, and I come back to the shower and all of a sudden there's a knock at it, and everyone had gone by this. There was only just me. It was at the Sydney Football Stadium, the old Sydney Football Stadium, yeah?
Long in the shower, are you, boss?
I'm getting a bit hot. I'm getting a bit hot here. Hang on, let me just check my heart rate. At 95, there you go, see that. So anyway, I come out of the shower and this, that, and I'm sitting down, knock at the door, open the door, and it's wanting to be a Boban. Yeah. So my creation is not particularly good.
It's getting better.
It's getting better. But I did my best and all that. And he turned around and said, look here's my jersey. You can have my jersey. So I gave him the Aston Villa one.
And if you're a kid listening to this and you're not sure how good this guy was at football, go onto YouTube right now. You've got time. Go onto YouTube.
He was an amazing player playing for what was an amazing team back then. Yeah. You know, that was one of the great teams in world football and had been for quite some time. Mm. Yeah.
And now he's still involved with football, isn't he?
Is he
with FIFA? Or?
Yeah, he was with FIFA. And then from FIFA, he went to be director of AC Milan. But I think now he might be going back to... I don't think he's with AC Milan this moment in time. Yeah.
What a player. Yeah. Best team you faced, this one from Troy Sullivan?
Oh, countless teams as well. Like that AC Milan team was amazing. The Man United team, before I joined them, they were an amazing side. You know, the Real Madrid side that we got knocked out by, Manchester United, that were amazing. They ended up winning the Champions League. The Brazil team that we played for Australia before the 1998 World Cup, they were an amazing side. The list goes on, really. You know, there were so many fantastic sides that I was to come up against. Even with Aston Villa, we played against the Atletico Madrid side that included Christian Vieri. They're a fantastic side as well. Molina in goals. Like I said, the list goes on and on and on. There were some absolutely fantastic teams that I come up against. I can't really. There's not enough time to go through some of the. Those are the ones that just sort of strike you. You know, sort of strike your chord right now from the top of my head.
Well, Bozzy, we got through as many as possible, and there'll be more questions over the coming weeks, and we're going to do more of these.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic. Good, so. Obviously, people want to know best player I played with, I would have thought as well. There's so many to talk about.
Good stuff, Boz. Mm. We'll get your best 11 for and against next time. That's us for the Fox Football Podcast. Quarantine edition, if you want to. It's questions in quarantine, basically. We could have called that podcast. But
I apologise, everyone. It was supposed to do 45 minutes. It took about an hour, doesn't it?
56 minutes we're ticking over to now, so it's perfect.
We'll be back again. And like I said, if I've missed anything, I really apologise. And please get back to us. There may be things you agree with, there may be things you disagree with. And this is coming back to my point about going forward with football. the most important thing is that, that there is feedback, but we do it in an amicable way, because, you know, if there's not that, then there's no spirit of understanding between each other. And this is on going forward with football in Australia, by the way. The other stuff, you can say what you like.
Fair enough, Boz. Thanks very much. Stay healthy.
You too.
To everyone out there listening as well.
Stay healthy.
Stay cool. We'll get through this together. We'll see you next time on the Fox Football Podcast.